It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Reminder, tomorrow broadcasting live 4 to 7 for the Huddle and CBGN from First Republic Brewery in Essex as we kick off the Winter Craft Beer Tour. All kinds of stuff. Like, I've been there a bunch of times. Love that place. Kevin and the boys do a great job. They can help you out with your home brewing. They're bringing in barbecue, a great menu. They do pizza and a pint there one night a week also. And all, you know, and proceeds of the money brought in tomorrow goes to SOAR, a organization that helps veterans when they come back from combat. So a great time will be had. A great cause will be donated to. And we look forward to seeing you from 4 to 7. So stop by tomorrow. As for what's coming up on the show today, professional bowler Jason Belmonte is going to join us in 5 minutes. We'll get some notes on Michaela Schifrin, gold medalist at 6:20. And going up until 6:30 as UVM takes on UNH. But first, I don't know why I didn't really see this before. I don't know why I never noticed this and made this connection, but Brad Stevens and Bill Belichick have a lot in common. Where did I get this idea? What made me come to this realization? Well, last night I'm listening to the Barstool Sports podcast, Pardon My Take, and Rachel Nichols of ESPN is on it. And she's talking with Big Cat and PFT, the boys over at Pardon My Take, about the Celtics and about Stevens. And Rachel Nichols of ESPN, who's the host of The Jump on ESPN TV with T-Mac and Paul Pierce and those guys, she had this to say about Stevens, and afterwards you'll see the parallel with Belichick.
To me, like what happened to Isaiah Thomas in Cleveland, what happened to Jay Crowder in Cleveland, what happened to Avery Bradley in Detroit, bolsters Brad Stevens coach of the year candidacy for this year, right? Doesn't this make you think that in addition to, gee, he did a great job after Gordon Hayward went down and, oh my God, he's getting so much out of those young Boston players. I would also put on his like coach of the year campaign, have you seen these other guys after they left Boston? I mean, that's a big case in my point.
So Rachel Nichols says, have you seen what's happened to players after they've left Brad Stevens' system? And she named a few. Isaiah Thomas went from fifth in MVP voting and back up the Brinks truck to now nobody wants me. Jay Crowder was an effective player on a team-friendly contract in Boston. We thought he was going to be great for Cleveland. 3.5 months later, shipped out of town, banished to Utah. Then you look at Avery Bradley, who it wasn't working for him in Detroit. And maybe it's not even so much that it wasn't working for him, but they could get Blake Griffin. But these guys leave Brad Stevens, and they're no longer as good as they were in Boston. And where is that parallel to? That's parallel to Bill Belichick in New England. We get it on our Facebook page every day where you guys tell me, here are people that were good in New England and only good in New England. Okay? Kevin Falk would have only been good in New England. Shane Vereen, Deion Lewis, Stephen Ridley, and that's just running backs. Matt Cassel, only good in New England. Awful everywhere else he went. Logan Ryan at defensive back. I hear this all the time, and then you get the other way. People who are bad other places that are only good in New England that way. Chris Hogan and Eric Lee, the linebacker, and anybody else you could think of, Wes Welker and Julian Edelman, people that the Patriots picked up off the scrap heap and made good. Why? Because they fit the system. They fit the system, and there's good coaching. There's good coaching at the top, and there's good coaching along the staff that help develop players and help bring the best out of players. Players that aren't able to be fully utilized in other spots. It's rather amazing when you look and see the players that have come through New England and have only had success in New England. Either they started in New England, were good, went other places and weren't, or they started other places, weren't good, went to New England and became good or became better. Maybe we're seeing the same thing with the Celtics now. I don't know why I didn't realize this before, but Thomas, Crowder, these guys aren't the same. Bradley, they're not the same without Brad Stevens. Look at the guys that are being brought in. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum get drafted, and at 19 and 20, they're able to be really, really productive NBA players and starters in some cases. Look at Marcus Smart, who I don't know what his value is on the open market, but I know what his value is to Boston. And maybe it's because Brad Stevens is able to get something out of him that maybe nobody else could. Brad Stevens and Bill Belichick do have a lot of similarities. And look, you can knock it when we say, oh, he fits the system. Oh, it's just the system. Well, maybe this lends credence to that. The system that they're put in, the coaches that they're playing under, that allows these guys to flourish. And that's what it's about as a coach. I mean, think about it as an employer. Think about it as a parent. When are you at your best? When you put your kid or when you put your employee in a position to succeed. Don't ask them to do things that they can't do. Ask them to do things that they can do and that by extension make you better. Things that help out your work dynamic. Look, if my bosses tomorrow asked me, hey, Brady, go host a music show on one of our music stations. Could I do it? Maybe. But would I do it well? No. That's not putting me in the best position to succeed. Brad Stevens is able to put Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, others in positions to succeed. Bill Belichick is able to put Chris Hogan and all of these guys, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, all of these guys in positions to succeed, and that's what's made them valuable players in the NFL for what Belichick and his staff and his coaching staff and their vision is. And we're starting to get that same reputation out of Celtics head coach Brad Stevens as well. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Look, you all know this. I love football season. And when football season is over, I get sad just like all of you do. But the one benefit to football season ending is we get a chance to talk about some stories. And like in the huddle day, we talked to Mike Gennetti, who runs SpotTrack, which is the site that keeps track of every athlete's and every team's contracts and payroll situation. We wouldn't have been able to have the time to do that in football season, but in the offseason we can. Now we're going to talk to somebody who I've long wanted to talk to, but never gotten the chance to. Jason Belmonte, professional bowler. And I put pro bowler on Twitter, and I think people thought I was talking to an NFL player, and they're like, who the heck is Jason Belmonte? No, Jason Belmonte is a professional bowler in the PBA. And he's arguably the greatest bowler of all time at just 34 years old. 34 years old. He's already got 9 major championships. He's the fastest bowler ever to get to that number. He goes for 10 this season as we start the 2018 season. It's just kicked off. Looking at the producers. We got Jason ready? All right. Jason Belmonte, professional bowler, is on the TikTok Jewelers guest line with us now. Again, arguably the greatest bowler in history at just the age of 34, 9 major championships. Jason, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Good, thanks, Mike. Thank you for having me on your show.
I appreciate you joining us. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of bowling, you bowl two-handed, I read.
Yes, I have a slightly unusual technique. It all started because when I rolled my first ball, I was 18 months old, and the ball was too heavy to use a traditional one-handed style. So I developed this two-handed technique to allow me to just pick the ball off the rack and roll it down the lane. And as I was getting older, I realized two things. One, I was actually getting pretty good at doing it that way. And two, I could curve the ball so much more than all the other kids in the bowling center. So that was kind of cool to me. And I just never stopped.
Jason, is this two-handed bowling style going to start to take off? Because I think of like table tennis. We've got multiple different ways to hold the paddle. In regular tennis, multiple different two-handed backhand or one-handed backhand. Is two-handed bowling going to become a thing?
We actually already seen it, believe it or not. Yeah, so when I first came out on tour, there was myself and one other guy from Finland who has a very similar story to me, his life story. So we were the only two out there. Now I think there's about 8 to 10 guys that bowl on the pro tour using the two-handed technique. And when you start to filter it down to junior bowling, youth bowling, we're seeing an enormous increase in the use of this technique. So I think the more success that two-handed players have on tour, the more legitimacy we give the style. And it obviously allows children to look up to us and to want to, kind of do it the way that we do.
Now, I am a terrible bowler, although I do enjoy going. So let me ask you this. When I go bowling and the size of the ball, this is the most basic thing. I never even know what size to pick. Do I want something that's lighter that I can throw real fast? Do I want something that's heavier? I don't even know what the proper size is.
Well, considering I can't see the size of your arms, I'm going to guess that you're a decent sized man, so you'll
six
be able
five.
To handle a heavier ball. I would say you need to be able to throw a ball down the lane where the ball doesn't feel like you can throw it through the back, but also where you're not going to throw it behind you because you lose grip of it. So most guys, when they're bowling recreationally, will be anywhere between 13 to 15 pounds. Somewhere in that range, if you feel comfortable, then that's the ball that I would suggest you do. Any lower than that, then the ball can actually deflect too much off the pins, so you're not going to knock them over. And if it's too heavy, you may not get enough deflection. So it's somewhere in the middle.
We talk about your two-handed style becoming more of a regularity. There are actually people that are against this. Why?
Why is a good question. I'm not entirely sure of the why, other than it's a personal preference, their own personal feeling and belief. I mean, there's no rule that we're breaking when we bowl this way. It's just kind of, you know, it's a little bit different. It's not the way that a traditionalist was taught the game or how they play the game. And so they decide to, you know, try to, I guess, share their opinion, in fact, in the fact that they think it's not the correct way. However, I'm still yet to find, you know, a specific style that is the correct way. I think it's one of the most marvelous things about bowling is we all have our own little signature technique, and as long as you abide by the rules, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care how you throw it down the lane, as long as you're knocking over the pins from the same distance that I am, using the same kind of equipment that I am, then let's go at it.
Jason Belmonte, professional bowler with us, 34 years old, already 9 major wins in his career, the fastest ever to that number as we start the 2018 season. I think a lot of people associate professional bowling with Pete Weber, slick back hair, black sunglasses. How much cooler are you than Pete Weber now?
Well, I mean, the definition of cool is very subjective. I think, you know, Pete has so much fire and passion, and he displays that slightly different to I do. So when Pete bowls, it's typically a lot of fireworks. Anything can happen, honestly. You watch him because you're not sure what's going to happen. And I don't think I quite have that level of anticipation when I play. But I hope that the way that I bowl and the way that I carry myself certainly appeals to a different demographic to Pete. So you might find us both cool for different reasons.
Now, I know you're from Australia. Is Australia a big bowling hotbed, or are you the outlier?
It is a big hotbed for bowling recreationally. We are a big bowling nation for fun, but competitively, we are growing, which is something that I'm very excited about. And I think that's a lot has to do with the more success that Aussies do have on the pro tour. We've got a couple of guys that come out on tour and have had a little success, which is awesome. So the better that we do, I think the more spotlight we show on the competitive side of bowling back home, but it's certainly something that I want to invest a lot of time in and a lot of energy in growing the sport back home.
You mentioned the spotlight on sports, and right now we got the Winter Olympics going on, and we're seeing a lot of sports that we don't follow in the mainstream. How do you react when people say bowling isn't a sport? Because I always defend bowling even though I can't do it, but how do you react when people say that?
Yeah, usually I find common ground, usually. You know, I often ask them of a sport that they're interested in or, you know, perhaps a hobby of theirs that they consider to be a sport that perhaps I don't consider to be a sport. And we try to find elements of both that apply to both sports. It can be frustrating, but I try not to poke the same stick that they poke at me, because usually if I don't consider something a sport, it's because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is one of the main reasons why I think bowling has that portrayed image, is that the majority of people see this as a recreational fun thing that you do on a Friday night when the disco lights go on, and yet they're a little bit unfamiliar about the very competitive, complex part of bowling when we're talking about oil patterns and physics dynamics inside of bowling balls and cover stocks and angle of entries. You start to get very complex discussions, and then usually it opens their eyes up to, wow, I didn't know that, and now I can consider it to be more of a sport than I did before we started talking.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I look at bowling in some ways the way I look at golf and putting and things like that. And I started thinking about, you know, in baseball we're focused on how fast the ball spins. And I feel like, you know, the spin rate and the rotations is big in bowling. It feels like it's almost like a math problem or a science project, figuring out how you want to hit these pins at what angle and how fast you want to throw it, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. And it's ever-changing. Another thing a lot of people don't realize about bowling is that the oil on top of the lane, well, obviously, as the ball goes down the lane, the ball is picking up that oil. So that oil is moving, it's changing. And if you were to compare it to golf, it's imagine you playing on the third hole at 11 a.m. and it's been a dog leg left. And then I play in the afternoon session, and then the hole has completely reversed itself, and now it's a dog leg right. That is essentially what is happening to a bowling lane, as you have, you know, 100, 200, 300 competitors rolling balls down the lane. It's ever-changing, so you have to be quite intelligent, because you need to make these adjustments. You need to be able to see an invisible oil field, which is one of the reasons why I think bowling is one of the hardest games to become a professional at, all the while still knowing what equipment to use, where to stand on the approach, what target to hit, what speed, what rotation, and all of those things you do at once. Not only do you have to repeat them, but you might have to change them again the very next shot. So it's certainly a lot more difficult than a lot of people realize.
Jason Belmonte, professional bowler with us, 9 major championships already to his resume. And he's got more opportunities to win coming up in the next coming weeks. You can watch him on ESPN. He's also got the Barbasol PBA Players Championship, which is February 19th to 25th. Out in Columbus. Jason, we'll get you out of here on 2 more questions. One, up here we follow baseball and we follow the Boston Red Sox. Mookie Betts is an outfielder for the Red Sox, and in a pro-am, he bowled a 300. Now, I don't know if you know Mookie personally, so I'll just ask you this. Have you seen other professional athletes who aren't professional bowlers who are really good at bowling?
Well, first, let me correct you on one of those facts that you just wrote there. I'll let you know. I have met Mookie, and I don't know him all that well, but well enough to say good day to him. But that 300 game that you're talking about was not in a pro-am.
Ow.
Actually on the pro tour, a part of a major championship that we held in Reno in December last year called the World Championship. So that was one of the qualifying games that Mookie bowled. Was a perfect 300 game. He is an incredible athlete, let alone the way he swings a bat, catches the ball and throws it. You put any sport equipment in his hand, and I get this feeling like he's just a naturally gifted athlete. And whether it be, you know, shooting threes from the perimeter or, you know, spiraling a football pass 40 yards, I get this feeling that Mookie can do it all.
Last question. You did a trick shot bowling video with the guys from Dude Perfect. I met those guys at the Super Bowl 2 years ago in Houston. How fun was that video? And I'll link it to our website. How fun was that video? And did it only take you one chance to do those shots, or did you need to do it like 110 times?
Listen, I was brought up by not letting the truth get in the way of a good yarn. So let's just, for argument's sake, say, yes, I'm that good. It only took me one attempt for every single trick. But truth be told, a few of them took a little longer than that. The boys from Dude Perfect are awesome. They're really good boys. They just have a lot of energy. They love what they do for a living, and it really kind of makes it infectious when you're around them. You, even if you're feeling a little dull for the day, just spend 5 minutes with those fellas, and you'll soon realize you're ready to go, and you got a smile on your face. So I'm hoping to do another trick shot video with them. We've been talking about it for years. It just so happens that our schedules keep clashing, so I'm hoping once this winter swing of my competition finishes, I'll be able to find a couple of days there and do some more filming with the boys and do a part two. We've got some pretty wild, if you think the first video was crazy, some of the ideas that we've got for the second one are ridiculous.
Well, I can't wait for the sequel, and can't wait for the sequel to your 2017 here in 2018. Jason Belmonte, 34 years old, 9 major championships. Jason, best of luck on getting to number 10. We appreciate the time.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Anytime.
Jason, there he goes, man. I appreciate it. Fun interview. Fun interview getting to know Jason Belmonte. Again, a guy who, look, I'm not going to lie to you people, I don't watch a ton of bowling, but a guy who I've heard of, a guy who I've wanted to get on for a while, and He's fun, man. He's a fun guy. So I'm happy we were able to get him. We'll try to do it again because, I'm sorry I didn't have all the Mookie Betts facts right, but the fact that he says that he's a great bowler, that's pretty cool. The numbers show he's a good bowler, but somebody in the biz who's arguably the best of all time says he's good, then I've bought in to Mookie Betts. So we're about 2.5 minutes away from getting ready to go out to UVM, and I just want to remind you all of this. Pretty cool that Michaela Schifrin, 22 years old, won another gold medal last night in the giant slalom on the women's side. She'll go for gold again. I think it's going to air tonight. It's really Friday in Pyeongchang, but sometime after midnight tonight, she'll go for gold in the regular slalom, of which she's a heavy favorite. And she's a Burke Mountain Academy graduate. Burke Mountain Academy, it's a boarding school, but a skiing boarding school in the Northeast Kingdom. We had Michaela Schifrin on last September. So we're a year, we're 15 months away from that interview. But I remember asking Michaela Schifrin about what she thought about, what Burke Mountain Academy meant to her, what it was like being there. Here was our conversation with Michaela Schifrin 15 months ago, where she talked about going to school here in Vermont, what her average day was like, what was her routine.
Yeah, I mean, what we would do is hammer school in the spring and fall, and then during the winter we would cut back on, not completely, but just more do like half days of school. So we'd ski in the morning and then do school in the afternoon, and it was a full schedule between preparing our equipment, our skis, to train every single day, and that the East Coast snow is not always the most forgiving, so we're tuning our skis for ice and trying to get all of our homework done and still traveling around to go to races, but it was a great experience. I really think it set me up to learn how to manage my time for the rest of my life.
Michaela Schifrin, that was her with us 15 months ago, a gold medalist again. She was the youngest athlete ever to win a gold medal in the slalom when she won it in Sochi at age of 18. She'll go for the repeat later tonight if you're on the East Coast, which most of our listeners I imagine are, but she'll go for the repeat tonight. She wins the gold medal in the giant slalom yesterday, and she cut her teeth right here in the state of Vermont. So that is pretty, pretty cool. So if you're watching Michaela Schifrin, recognize the local connection there. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to everybody who joined us today. Thank you to Jason Belmonte. Thank you to Mark Kessischer of ESPN for stopping by, and Michael Giannetti of SpotTrack. All those interviews available online. I've got UVM 7966, Sam Hyman next from Patrick Jim, UVM, and the Wildcats right here on 101.3 ESPN.